access their accounts electronically using online banking, mobile banking, mobile check deposit, online bill pay, and more. First Bank, the one who's here.
Broadcasting of the Tides on KSDK is brought to you by Muddy Water Adventures, providing reliable, locally run water taxi services and sightseeing tours on the ocean and Stikine River. For more information, call or text 907-305-0206 or visit muddywateradventures.com.
In marine weather, today we have variable winds at 10 knots near Point Coverdon. South winds then becoming west in the afternoon and seas 2 feet or less. Tonight, northwest winds at 10 knots in the evening becoming light, seas 2 feet or less. And tomorrow, which is Saturday, expect light winds becoming south at 10 knots in the afternoon, seas 2 feet or less. And the next low tide is at 3:31 p.m. with sunset at 9:06 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow at 4:24 a.m.
Broadcasting of the Stikine River level on KSDK is brought to you by Alaska Waters and 56 North, guiding visitors through our ancestral land since 1994. For more information, visit alaskawaters.com. Send an email, info@alaskawaters.com, or call 907-305-0495.
In local news, Wrangell's Nolan Center will showcase a new exhibit of repatriated Native objects in its main lobby this weekend. We went to visit the display before its official unveiling. A brown tobacco pipe sits in the display case. It's about the length of two hands and features inlaid blue minerals. It has two faces facing away from each other, and the shank stretches up in the center. It tells a story of the Gonakode, which is a sea monster in Tlingit culture. It's one of four items on display that recently returned home to Wrangell.
These are all, you know, fairly old, fairly venerable objects there. I would hazard a guess that they're probably around 100 years old each.
That's Tyler Eagle, who is Nolan Center's collection manager. The U'u or Tlingit property items include two dozen objects that have been shipped back over the last few years through the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, otherwise known as NAGPRA. The act ensures that items are returned back to the tribes and clans that they originally came from. While tribal governments have asked for them back, it's been a long process because the items have been held in museums for decades. Proving ownership is necessary and can be difficult, especially when the items are ancient. Over 800 of Wrangell's repatriated items were collected between 1921 and 1944 by the school superintendent, Axel Rasmussen. They were held in the Axel Rasmussen collection at the Portland Art Museum. Eagle says it was quite the legal battle to return the U'u to the Nunya'aya clan.
I believe it took some of these decades or items over a decade of work to get them back up.
Along with the four items on exhibit, three poster boards display other repatriated items that are not physically here because of their size.
There's a couple of different sort of lineages associated with these items. So you've got the general sort of Nunya'aya, symbolized by some of these marmot sort of crest symbols there.
The marmot mask is the property of Chief Shakes, which is the title for the Nunya'aya clan leader that has been generationally passed down. The mask was used to dance. It represents fleeing and surviving the Great Flood. The killer whale hat that sits next to the pipe is a replica. Eagle says it's about 50 years old, whereas the original that's not on display is around 125 years old. It represents courage.
We also have the original hat was one of the objects that was repatriated. We're displaying the replica just because the original has some structural issues. It's currently in a protective case that we're hoping it can stay in until we get something permanent set up.
Galeithge Kevin Callahan is the clan leader of the Nunya Aya and housemaster, which is a role that plays a high stature in the family. He says most of the come from his family's line. They belong to the whole clan, though. They were taken from his grandmother's grandmother when she passed away in the 1930s. He says it took 30 years for the items to come home after his uncle started to reclaim them under NAGPRA. Callahan says that the Burke Museum at the University of Washington had the marmot mask, the killer whale hat, and the sea monster pipe in their collection. Callahan says that hopefully in the next few years, 25 more will come home.
Right now, we're working with the Denver Art Museum, who's really not wanting to budge, and they have multiple objects there. One of the biggest objects they have is the mother bear, also called Many Faces, which is the screen that sits in front of the Shake House.
He says that last year's potlatch for mourning those who have passed happened because some of the objects were returned to the clan.
Without having a hat, you couldn't have a clan leader, because if you have a hat, somebody has to speak. So having the hat back, I was able to sit as a clan leader now and then speak, and we were able to cry and let our tears go and pay homage to all of our ancestors who have passed that we haven't properly been able to cry for.
It had been 84 years since the last mourning potlatch was held. Eagle, the center's collection manager, says the exhibit will be up throughout the rest of the tourist season, probably until October or November. He says the objects might be swapped around, as their owners might be checking them out for events. He says ideally the repatriated items would go in a permanent and secure exhibit in the museum. Eagle says the Nolan Center is currently in the process of looking for funding. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki. The unveiling of the repatriated objects is during the community market this Saturday at the Nolan Center, beginning at 10 a.m. And in regional news, in the cold, dark days of winter, some Alaskans turn to jigsaw puzzles to keep themselves busy indoors. This year, one Petersburg resident took the idea to the extreme, ordering the biggest puzzle in the world and rallying hundreds of community members to put it together. But as KFSK's Shelby Herbert reports, participants say the puzzle was more than just a puzzle. It was about finding a way for everybody to fit in.
It's another chilly weekend afternoon in Petersburg, and the rain buffeting the island has driven many indoors. And that is exactly where I find a few dozen families, in the community gym, assembling a Goliath 60,000-piece puzzle. The group isn't doing it all in one go. About 60 households and two school classes assembled 1,000-piece sections over the winter, which, according to participant Kelly O'Connor Demko, is the ideal time to chip away at such a project.
I enjoyed just having it to do over the winter. It was a nice time to pull out a puzzle and work on it.
The gargantuan puzzle is splayed all over the court, extending from one free throw line to the other. If you're not a basketball fan, that's about 10 by 30 feet. It depicts a world map with incredible detail. O'Connor Demko guides me to the Southeast Alaska section, which has scenes of totem poles in Juneau and seaplanes in Skagway, and flocks of the region's ubiquitous bald eagles soar everywhere in between. But to the crowd's disappointment, Petersburg is missing.
Wrangell. They just put Wrangell.
So we would be right here.
Uh-huh.
But they had Heidelberg.
I don't know why.
Some sections were harder to complete than others. Matt Powick and his family took home a chunk of Russia that was basically all one color.
Yeah, it was pretty much just a bunch of yellow.
Powick says he tried his best to get his family as excited about the project as he was, but he didn't have much luck until the very end. His daughter, 12-year-old Savina, jumped in when there were only about 40 pieces left.
I only worked on it towards the end. It was pretty hard, though.
Not all sections made it to the jigsaw jamboree in one piece. Moments ago, Caroline Dowd accidentally dropped hers in the parking lot, shattering months of her and her husband's hard work in a matter of seconds. She tells me all about it, while just behind us, a group of puzzlers hurriedly try to put the rain-soaked pieces back into place.
Yeah, I had like a box, and then I was holding the sides, and then it fell, and then it was just like a combination of like me trying to catch that piece, another piece fell, and it all just like combusted from there, and it was like a series of unfortunate events. Once I dropped it, I got a little dramatic, and I was like, I need your help right now.
Otherwise, the puzzle is coming together smoothly on the surface of the basketball court. At the center of the operation is Sandra Hurst, who is really into jigsaw puzzles. She says they give her a sense of peace and order in life and make her feel a bit more put together.
They are stress reliever for me. So when I get stressed and life gets crazy, it's kind of something that I can work on and just eases all the tension in life for a while, you know?
She says she thought a fun and meaningful way to share her passion would be to rally a bunch of people into working on something much, much bigger than themselves.
Instead of us just all doing our individual puzzles, you know, doing something bigger and larger that we could all come together for.
But when she told her husband about her idea, she says he told her she was crazy, and she'd be lucky if she got 5 people interested. She got well over 100. After a group photo with the enormous map, it's time for it to be disassembled by the hands that put it together in the first place, which is a little sad for some folks. But it's a spectacle for others, like 96-year-old Itsy Fujishin, who is looking on from the stands. I catch her gushing about it to a friend.
This is the biggest puzzle you've ever
yes,
seen.
Yes, it is. And it's beautiful.
The puzzle is going back into the box, but its life isn't over. Hurst and her co-conspirators are planning to send it to other communities in Southeast in hopes that the activity will help bring them together during the cold, dark winter, too. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
A bill to ban harmful forever chemicals in firefighting foams has passed the Alaska House and Senate by wide margins. Now it's on the way to Governor Mike Dunleavy. The legislation was sponsored by Democratic Senator Jesse Keel of Juneau. It prohibits the use of firefighting foams containing a class of man-made chemicals known as PFAS, which have polluted drinking water across Alaska and the rest of the country. Keel pushed for similar provisions last year, tucking them into a House bill that made it to the governor's desk, only for it to be vetoed. Exposure to even small doses of PFAS has been linked to health problems like liver damage, high cholesterol, and various kinds of cancer. They're known as forever chemicals because they don't break down in the environment, leading to persistent pollution of water and soil. Earlier this year, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency introduced the first enforceable limits for PFAS in drinking water. Now, public water systems have 5 years to accomplish the expensive and complicated task of cleaning up their PFAS-contaminated water. But Keel has said that the new state bill aims to prevent some of that pollution in the first place. In Alaska, firefighting foams, which are often used to fight fuel fires at airports or military bases, are believed to be the single biggest source of forever chemicals in the environment. The bill also allows the state to buy back small quantities of PFAS foam for safe disposal. That wraps up our local segment. Stay with us for All Things Considered.
Support for NPR comes